I have been looking forward to our next guest being on our program all morning long and all week long, actually. Judy Gold is the author of the new book, Yes, I Can. Yes, I can say that. When they come for the comedians, we are all in trouble. The book is published by Day Street. For Judy Gold, nothing is more insidious than enforcing silence and repressing jokes. The job of a comedian is to expose society's demons and confront them head on. No prisoners allowed. So in 10 impassioned polemics, she frames comedy as a tool of empowerment, a way to reclaim hateful rhetoric and battle the democracy-crushing plight of censorship. It is a great pleasure to welcome Judy Gold to the roundtable. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. And what an intro. Thank you so much.
It is wonderful to have you on the program. I love this book, man.
Oh, thank you.
This is just terrific. I'm sorry that you had to write it.
Yeah, I know. That is, it's the sad part of what's going on. Yeah, exactly.
When did you start? I mean, there's always been a sense of this, right? But when did you really start to, for the alarm bells to go off and say, oh, Jesus, this is something we really need to handle?
Well, you know, of course, it's been going on. It's been building and building. And I think what really started to get to me was, first of all, that there were comics, edgy, fearless comics, being paranoid at their home club. Like, if I say this, do you think I'm going to get in trouble? You know, or I did this on my special. Do you think something will happen to me? And I was like, you can't do your work with, you know, fear lurking in the background, especially a comic. But what really got me, the reason I wrote the book was because I did a piece on Vice News on HBO, and they were doing a piece on how college bookers were telling comedians what they can and cannot say on their stages. And I was the opposing viewpoint. And then HarperCollins came to me and said, will you write a book about this? The thing that really gets me, besides the fact that we don't take into consideration intent, context, to me, most.
Go ahead.
That Trump, you know, our lawmakers, their speech is so incites violence and it's so destructive. And yet our president has no sense of humor, wants to shut down SNL. There's no comedian at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's just, it's gotten so bad. So, yeah.
This was a question I had for later in our conversation, but because we seem to be at that point, let me ask you about it now. I think it's relatable. Here's what I don't understand. So recently, Jimmy Fallon came under pressure for doing a skit on SNL. And then we went back and they said, oh, there were these episodes of the recently unearthed episodes. They were from 2015. Thirty Rock.
But they say unearthed and it was like a year ago. I find that a little.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I'm asking, though, is so obviously things have changed. But where was, if there was going to be outrage, where was the outrage when it was originally aired? It's not like Jimmy Fallon doing. And by the way, I'm not endorsing what he did. All I'm asking is, does, you know, if it was bad taste now, wasn't it in bad taste then? And shouldn't there have been an uproar then? And it's not like it was hidden. It was on a nationally televised commercial popular program.
Right. And now, because of the fact that, you know, systemic racism is the zeitgeist, that they're like, oh, wait, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And they draw attention to it. But It should have been known. I mean, but, you know, we are continually evolving as a society, and words, have different meanings. It's when 20 years ago someone says something and we're going to bring it up. I understand that is, you know, 20 years ago we were in a different mindset, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, should they have known? Of course. But, you know, satire, like oftentimes you think things are appropriate, and they are. maybe they're edgy, but then a few years later, they just become completely unacceptable. And, you know, you can't compare the two. You can't compare what someone said. Like, I talk about Lenny Bruce.
Yes.
He was arrested for cursing, but they really wanted him on the content, on the fact that he was talking about segregation and the Vietnam War and, you know, government overstepping. And, you know, that's they got him on the cursing, but that is what they really wanted. We are truth tellers. But I'm with you on that. It, you know, when is the unearthing? What constitutes unearthing?
You know, it's somewhat of an apples to oranges comparison because, as you say, that I mean, being in a comedy club, being performing as a comedian is a different act than being on television, right? I mean,
that is
different. And then that, and I would think for you as a comedian, a club would be a much safer space,
right?
And how much of this, you know, you think of what happened to Michael Richards.
Mm-hmm.
How much of this is because people now have a phone in their pocket and they use it?
What a great. It is the Yelp review gone wild.
Because it's taken out of context, right? Isn't that the problem?
Right. So here's what happens. You know, someone videotapes a portion of something, right? And out of context, no nuance, no intent, you know? And then that person is vilified. You know, I write in the book how if you commit murder and you are on trial for homicide, your sentence is determined by your intent. Did you mean to do it? What were you thinking? Were you thinking about it before? And yet we don't give the same consideration to a stand-up comedian. But, you know, I do have a chapter regarding social media and how, you know, there's good things about these phones. The fact that you know, we're really seeing racism in real time after people have been complaining for years and years. You know, thank God for those phones the cameras on the phones. But when it comes to stand-up, you know, this is the only art form where you need an audience to inform you. Oftentimes, when we're, you know, you talk about the home club. When we're at our home club and we're trying out new material, again, the only art form where you're seeing a work in progress. A painter doesn't, you know, start a, you know, an oil painting and then they're like a tenth of the way done and invite an audience to come and say, oh, do you think I should put the tree here? Or should I get rid of the tree? Or should I put the sun? You know,
yeah.
It's really, so when we go over the line, which we often do, we do it when we are in the process of writing a bit. We oftentimes don't know where the line is until we've crossed it. The audience informs us as much as we inform the audience. So don't go to someone's home club, take a video of them doing their work. Do you want someone taking a video of you sitting in your office? You know?
No.
Exactly.
No, I don't want them anywhere near me. But it's weird because obviously, just by the nature of what you're doing, you're performing and you're doing it before an audience, and you want people watching you and you want people laughing at you or at the material that you're delivering.
Right.
And there is, so does it affect, and I'm asking this to you as a personal question, does it affect the writing for you? Do even though you have written this brilliant book, does it still, do you think it has an impact? Do you think, oh, all right, I don't know. Should I say this? Should I not?
I think it does for some comedians. I really think it depends on how long you've been in the business. I mean, I've talked to multiple comedians about it. There's some who are like, you know, it's fine. I'll just write material about blank instead. I have been doing this for so long and was uncensored for so long that I think, and I write about this in the book, you can really joke about anything, any subversive topic, but it has to be funny. You know, you can't be spewing racial epithets for no reason or using stereotypes for no reason. You know, stereotypes did not come out of thin air. They're
right
from our ancestors, you know, and to say, no, we can't, you know, cannot say that. You cannot say, you can say that. Say it wisely. Craft a joke. And then on the same hand, listen to the, you know, on the other hand, listen to the joke. Listen to the entire thought and stop getting triggered by a word that you don't like.
When do you think there's a difference in being for well, let me ask this question first. Okay. How has it impacted you in personally, in the sense of where you have you had the moment where someone has stood up and taken you on for what you said?
Oh, absolutely. I've had, you know, it's funny. I have had people complain. You know, I do material. I have a few jokes that are related to the Holocaust, which, you know, are not really about, I mean, they mention the Holocaust, but, you know, one of them is about if my family was stuck in the Anne Frank house, how we would get caught because my mother's so loud,
right.
Which is really about my mother, you know, but yeah. People think, oh my God, she can't talk about the Holocaust, you know, and that's where we go. We're wrong. You know, they're wrong. I don't think I'm wrong, but there I have been. And a lot of the times, you know, when I first started doing stand-up, and I would talk about my mother a lot, and I would get sort of vilified by the Jewish press that I'm promoting a stereotype of a Jewish mother, when in fact, I'm talking like my mother and verbatim saying what she had just come out of her mouth. It was like free material. And if you know, that's your impression that I'm promoting a stereotype. My impression is I'm a comedian. I'm talking about my mother on stage in places where there are no Jewish people, you know?
Right.
So comedy can educate. It can, it's a coping mechanism. It alleviates tension, but it also breaks stigmas.
When you have a chapter at the you write at the beginning of the I didn't say they're all cheap chapter. Yeah. I'm often asked during interviews, are you more of a lesbian comedian or a Jewish comedian? Mm-hmm. And you say you want to respond, you know, what kind of stupid effing question is that?
Right.
But you don't because you want a good write up. You write.
Right.
But. Also about being a woman, a female comedian. You also yeah. write about this, and you talk a lot about Joan Rivers, which is really fascinating. Talk a little bit about her and what, because she was really one of the first, wasn't she?
Well, you know, there were a few before her, but her career spanned 50 years, and in those 5 decades, you really saw where women stood in society by the topics that she was tackling in her stand-up. And she really was fearless and did talk about divorce and plastic surgery before anyone else did. She never apologized for a joke. You know, I write about how she did check, you know, people were mad at her for her Elizabeth Taylor jokes, but she had asked Roddy McDowell, who was a friend of both of theirs, if it bothered Elizabeth. And she said, no, it doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny that, you know, it didn't bother her, but it bothered other people. It didn't bother Elizabeth, but you know, I think she is the epitome of free speech, fearlessness, she really embodied what being a stand-up was, and she was never more relevant than when she died at 82. You know, Chris Rock wrote about her that she was the, you know, the Mount Rushmore of comedy. She had such an impact on so not only women, but all free speech advocates. But I remember during my research for the book, I went to the Museum of Broadcasting in New York, and I watched an interview she had with Alan King when she was about my age, and it was fascinating. She had already had so much fame. She had been through the, you know, ringer with the Johnny Carson, the Tonight Show, and her husband dying, and yet she was saying things that rang true with me at this time in my life and my career about being a woman who's aging, and that you're sort of invisible. but yet you get funnier as you get older because you have more life experience and you really don't care anymore.
You write, Joan professed until the day she died that she said the things that everyone was thinking but were too afraid to say. That's precisely what good comedians do. But even today, the stakes for women are higher than for men. Talk a little bit about that.
You know, in our look, I don't have to tell you, we have a president who can make the most disgusting misogynistic remarks and yet get elected.
Right.
We haven't even had a female vice president. I mean, the misogyny in this country is beyond, and the double standard for women is beyond. You know, Joan and Jean Carroll and Phyllis Diller and Moms Mabley, you know, a lot of these women would get on stage and for the first minute or two of their act, they had to be self-deprecating so the audience liked them before they got into their material. We also never dressed provocatively. My generation, you know, in the 80s, 90s, you look at female comics, they're all like in suit jackets. And I mean, it was the style then, but, you know, we didn't want to be objectified on stage. Because it's a spoken word art form. We wanted people to listen to us. And, you know, for women, there is such a double standard. You can see it every single day. You look at, you know, female politicians. It's like, what was she wearing? The words we have for women in our lexicon here, in, you know, it's, there's so many more words for a horrible woman than there are for a horrible guy.
Yeah. Are we being unfair to Ellen DeGeneres?
You know, that's a tough one because I never worked for her. But of course, our community is very small and everyone hears about what's going on. If you profess to be one thing and are something else altogether to the point where, you know, it's uncomfortable and abusive to some of the, you know, I don't, it's a corporation. I mean, it's a network. It's a corporation. Right. So it's like we take entertainment, we put it on a pedestal as if it's an HR problem. You know, the problem with comedy is there's, you know, stand up, there's no HR department, but they have an HR department.
And it's different. I mean, because obviously she's a well-known comedian. She's a well-known stand-up. She's been around for a long time. I assume you've worked with her
a couple times. Yeah.
And I was just wondering in the terms of what we were talking about of a double standard for women.
Well, I wonder, has that happened? That's a great question. I wonder if that has happened. I mean, part of the, you know, I've been reading a lot about this, and part of it is, you know, she professes to be the kindest person and opines about being kind, be kind, be kind. And, you know, it's like, wait, you know, people who worked for her were like, no, you're not kind. So
yeah,
I don't, it's funny, you know,
I don't know what to make of it when Brad Garrett weighs in.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. But, you know, a lot of people had terrible experiences. I know a lot of people who had terrible experiences with her and would tell me things. And it's so hard. You know, it's here. I know that they're not the same. I'm not saying these are the same. But, you know, Bill Cosby, when, you know, he was arrested. I remember I had a driver. I was going to do some show. And the driver's like, I just can't believe he would do that. I can't believe he would do that. And I said to him, you know, Dr. Huxtable didn't do it. Bill Cosby did it, you know. and it's like they can't separate the two, you know,
so,
the public persona. But yes, I don't know. Have there been abusive guys like that? That, I mean, Bill O'Reilly, like some guys.
Matt Lauer and
suffered.
Charlie Rose, yes. and those have all been, you know, overt and sexual in nature.
Right.
But of the comedy shows, I don't know. The conclusion of your book is ask the wonderful question of, so what the hell are we going to do about it? So obviously talking about it is one thing. But how do ultimately we, you know, make it better?
You know, we have to stop taking ourselves so seriously, and we have to take ourselves out of the picture. Everything's not about you. A comedian gets on stage for one reason, to make you laugh. You know, you're being offended, you're getting triggered is on you. It's not on the comedian. And it's seriously, it's like you hear a one of your favorite musicians wrote a new song. You don't like the new song. Do you then say, forget it, they should never write another song again? Do you go to an art gallery or a museum and you're looking at your favorite paintings? One of them, you know, painter, one of them you don't like. Do you say, forget it, that person should never paint again? You know, we have to stop this coddling of the American mind, which was a great book. You know, this is what causes, you know, I don't understand why people are being protected from feeling uncomfortable. Like, since when is feeling uncomfortable not acceptable? Every safe space has a door to the real world. You know, you got to learn how to deal with it.
And I'm not trying to put myself up as some great example here, but I've never been at a comedy show where if you don't find something funny, you just don't laugh at it. I've never been, I've never been like personally offended by it.
And said, oh, I have to shut that person down because they said something that I was offended by. No, it's this idea. Everyone gets a trophy, you know, so it's like you get the trophy for winning the race and breaking the record, and you get a trophy for smiling while he did it. No, that's not how the world is.
And it's OK. And I assume you believe this, but it's OK if you're not enjoying yourself at a show, get up and go home. Right. That's fine.
That's fine. Just do it quietly. Don't heckle us. You know.
Well, what about heckling? I mean, that is that's a part of the job too, right?
Right. It's an unfortunate part of the job. It's the part of the job that no one else has to deal with when they are doing their job. No one. It's, you know, these people are so, you know, look, being a comedian it's a powerful position. You're in charge. You know. And people get intimidated, or they want to be the center of attention, or whatever. They had too much to drink. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's so. It's like, do you, when you're getting your teeth cleaned, are you like, you know, just to screw your dentist up? No, it's, you know, you have to put these people in their place, but. Don't come to a comedy club if you're going to yell at the comedian. We're not in your living room. You're not your sibling. Stop it. But it's an unfortunate part of the job. And, you know, during this administration, it has been like never before.
Yeah. Because it seems like it's allowed, right?
Well, yeah. Well, look at the leader, you know,
right,
he
right.
says, and, but also this idea that, because you don't have the same political leanings as I do, then I am going to shut you down. You know, that was never, you know, every president has been fodder for material for comedians. I write in the book about Lyndon Johnson, and he was very upset about, I mean, Nixon and Lyndon Johnson were not fans of the Smothers Brothers because, you know, they were social commentators, which is what real comedians are, and truth tellers. And Johnson was fodder for a lot of their bits about, you know, they were very anti-Vietnam and segregation and just, they were great. The Smothers Brothers, they got fired essentially and canceled. Lyndon Johnson wrote them a letter saying, you know, although it was difficult for me to watch, it was my honor to be, you know, your material because that's part of this, how, why this country is so, is what it is, and that it's part of my job as president to be the focus of satire. And I wish you all the best. Now, can you even imagine that happening today?
No.
Yeah.
No. Judy Gold, I love your book. It's yes.
Oh, I love you.
I can say that when they come for the comedians, we are all in trouble. The book is published by Day Street. I really appreciate you being with us, and it's just been a highlight of the week. A good way to go out. Thank you very much.
Oh, this was so fun. Thank you.
Be well. Thank you.
Again, too.
The name of the book, Yes, I Can Say That by Judy Gold. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.